for this evening's talk. I'm going to give a similar talk to what I gave to the monks on Wednesday night. So many... Come on, behave. So many times, especially as a forest monk over in Thailand for many years, sometimes you were put in situations where you did not have the same medical cover as you have in a country like Australia. Sometimes that we had, one of those occasions was the first year I was a monk in Thailand. The very first year, I had a very bad toothache, and that toothache was so intense that there's no way that I could rest, even trying to meditate when you have extreme pain. You know what happens? You try and do things like just being in this moment, watching the breath, and then it's like the pain just busts down all the doors which you can't lock so you can just stay with your breath. You're trying to control your physical feelings, but it doesn't work. So it kept on busting down everything, and just this pain was intolerable. And in those days, you went to the medicine cabinet. This was in 1974, I think. 74, yeah. Went to the medicine cabinet in the forest monastery, and you opened it. It was empty. Nothing in there. We were really poor. And so no medicine. So what can you do? So the next thing you do is I start to do some chanting. Do you believe the chanting works? I didn't. But when you're desperate, you'll try anything. But I had to stop the chanting, and the reason was because I was chanting so loud out of desperation. I was going to wake not just the whole monastery up, but also the villagers a kilometer away. So I couldn't do that anymore. So then, no way I could do any meditation. I tried doing walking meditation. Have you ever seen the monks doing the walking meditation? A lot of the times, if you do walking meditation, say in a retreat center or in monastery, we usually walk really, really slowly. But there's no... Actually, that slow walking meditation was quite weird, because I remember just over in Serpentine that there was another monk teaching a meditation retreat, and a couple of Sri Lankans, a Sri Lankan family, asked permission. Can we just go and see your retreat center? And I said, of course you can, but be quiet, there's a retreat on. So they drove over to the retreat center. It's only 600, 700 meters from our monastery. And when they went inside there, they had a look. And when they came back, they said, we were going to go home, but our kid insisted on reporting to you. And he came up to see me, and he was really agitated, this kid. So what's wrong? Ajahn Brahm, your retreat center has been invaded by zombies. Because they were doing the slow walking meditation. And many of them were wearing white. And this kid thought it was a zombie invasion. And from that moment on, I used to call that slow walking meditation zombie meditation. It's not zombie meditation, it just makes it interesting. But anyway, there's no way I could do slow walking meditation because I was really in pain. I was running up and down. And so, you got to this point, it's maybe 1 or 2 o'clock in the morning. What to do? You have sometimes these amazing experiences. You can't go forward, you can't go back, and you can't stand still. It's a beautiful way which Ajahn Chah used to describe it. You can't go forward, you can't go back, you can't stand still. Everything you ever thought could escape from this unbearable situation didn't work. So what can you do? Yes. Let it be. Let go. And honestly, that was the first time which I ever did that. I'd heard about it so many times. I'd read books about it, heard these great teachers from all sorts of traditions say the benefits of being able to let go. That was the first time I ever really did it. And it was kind of the experience, when you really do it properly, it's kind of just, I think the word in Australia is gobsmacking. What on earth is going on? One moment you were in unendurable pain, and the next moment you were free of that pain and experiencing bliss instead. I'm not exaggerating, just this really great feeling of happiness. No pain, no toothache anymore. And it was about 2 o'clock in the morning, and the bell in that monastery used to go at 3. So I decided to meditate for about half an hour, an easy meditation. And then I lay down to have a rest. And then half an hour later, the bell went and got up and could have a little toothache, but it wasn't much at all. But the power of that, how you can really let things go, was something which was amazing to experience. And it explained many other tales. I remember hearing this tale about this guy in the working in the mines many years ago in the north of Western Australia. And his job, he was the person who put the explosives in the mines late at night, just alone, because if any mistakes happened, he didn't want anybody else to be injured. So he'd go there after everyone else had finished and go to the end of the mine. They'd already drilled the holes for putting the explosives in, and he would put the explosives in and then walk away and then detonate them so they'd be ready for the excavation the following morning. And he said this one morning when he went to that mine and when he walked in, he felt something a bit odd in that mine shaft, but he checked everything, everything was fine. And even before he put the explosives in, he could hear a sound of something coming towards him. One of the other workers had forgot to put the brakes on one of the carts. And that cart was actually hurtling down the slope to the face of the mine. He realized there was no escape. So the only thing he could do was actually, as it came close to the mine face, there's no place to hide. He'd done such a good job of excavating. All he could do was to jump, but not high enough. There was not enough space. And so that metal trolley just severed his legs. And he would have to wait there for a few hours before the help would come. You can imagine how much pain that would be. But, he said, because there was no place to run, he couldn't go forward, couldn't go back, couldn't go anywhere, he had one of these experiences, which he said was just, again, gobsmacking. There was so much pain, the only thing he could do was to let go. And that's what he did. He let go. And when they came to rescue him and sew him up, he said that experience was such an amazing experience. Now, you could get prosthetic legs later on, but the experience of just being in such intense pain almost like motivated him, had to get him to let go so profoundly. And these are some of the things which I have noticed over the years, both personally and with others, The power of this mind is incredible. Of course, the Buddha kept on mentioning this. There's two parts to pain and suffering. The first part is the physical part. But the most intense part is the mental anguish. He called it like two thorns pricking you. The physical one actually is not that much. It's the mental reaction. That is the one which is really, really hard to bear. And if one can realize that and know that and use that, it's amazing just how you can have some very, very bad states of mind. And that makes all the pain much, much worse. Even if you're sick, there's something which they say, even the body may be sick, but the mind doesn't have to be sick. There was this guy here many years ago, and I always remember him. This was before we had this hall here. This was when we did all the teachings over in the what's now called the community hall. And you know, he would come and get some information or some instructions on meditation because he had extreme pain. He was part of the Osborne Park pain department, whatever, the pain clinic. And he told me at the time, in those days, they had this way of letting other people know what they were feeling. Because, you know, you may say, how are you? I said, well, it hurts, I'm in pain. That doesn't really tell you very much. Because everyone can say that. But, you know, using, you know, the machines, the, what's it called, the brain scans, they said you were experiencing exactly the same type of pain that an ordinary human being would experience if they're getting their arm cut off with a chainsaw, with no anesthetic. So that's a pain you're experiencing. He was one of the few people who were proven to experience such a huge amount of extreme pain that in those days anyway, he was legally allowed to use any drug at all, because the pain was so extreme. But then he came to using those extreme drugs is not much of an option. But nevertheless, he decided to come and try things like meditation. And I always remember his case because he came to see me one Saturday afternoon meditation class with a big smile on his face. And he sat in front of me with this big, stupid smile on his face and said, I've finally done it. What have you done? He was very pleased with himself. I finally got the flat line on the machine. Oh, the ECG. So no, I got that months ago. The EEG. That's the brain. He got that perfectly still. Is that possible? He could do it through his meditation. And I remember then he looked at me and said, he turned around and said, see all those people on the back of the hall, people I hadn't seen before. Said, there are some of the doctors and nurses from the Osborne Park Health Department, their pain clinic, trying to find out what the heck is going on. Because it was true. Because of his powerful use of the mind, he could almost negate the pain. It's weird, but it's kind of true. And even recently, I never intended to say this, but even recently, when I went to Sri Lanka couple of years ago, there was a gentleman there who came to see me. I got a message from the hotel lobby. There was somebody who would like to come and see you in your room. Can you do that? Who is he?
He was like a disciple, you know, who lives in Sri Lanka. He was a doctor working for the military. So, yeah, of course, he can come in. And when he knocked on the door and I opened the door, it wasn't just one man. It was his whole group of students, about 15 or 16, crowded into my tiny little bedroom in the hotel. I didn't stay in a suite, it was just a small bedroom. But nevertheless, they all came in. And that's when he started talking. And one of the things he mentioned was that one of his disciples, he was such a good meditator, they decided to do an experiment on him. And I did mention this before in other talks, but this is the first time that somebody actually sent me the video, which now has the subtitles, because it's all spoken in Sinhala. So, you know, if you listen to it, you wouldn't understand what the heck was going on. So this guy, in deep meditation, they had it all videoed, and he said, well, I'm a doctor, and I'm now going to do a little experiment on him. He had permission. I am now going to do an incision on his arm with a scalpel. And that's what this doctor did. Did an incision on his arm under on the cameras while this gentleman was in meditation. Imagine trying that here. Mukta is a doctor. Imagine you got up and you started cutting your husband Palash's arm with a knife. What would you do, Palash? Scream. But if you're in deep meditation, you don't scream at all. So they noticed the knife cutting the skin, blood coming out. It was disinfected first of all, but no anesthetic. And the fellow was just sitting there perfectly still. And then they just put some disinfectant on afterwards, a nice bandage on it. He was fine. He didn't know. In such a deep meditation that even though it should have hurt, it didn't at all. And I remember in this little video, one of the guys who was there said, oh, he's just got strong willpower. He's just resisting, you know, the pain. He's probably used to it. And so they decided to try something else. They had a little a coconut hair. And they said, oh, put it up his nose. So they started tickling up his nose while he was meditating. He was totally still, didn't move at all. What is pain? What is sickness? When you understand the power of the mind, it's amazing there's other opportunities, other things which you can do, which are sometimes kind of amazing. It's one of the reasons why, if any of you ever say, you're a doctor, do an operation, this is going to hurt. Never say that. Because if you think it's going to hurt, it hurts more. Just say, oh, this is nothing. A lot of time it's what we add to pain, what we add to sickness, that is something which we have opportunities to do something about. Is our reactions. That's the same way to, oh, so much over the last week I didn't get much sleep, because when you got a cough and when you got a cold, you're trying to sort of, I don't try to go to sleep, you just sit, meditate. And it's weird, what I was telling the other monks was that even though, you know, you feel not much energy, it's amazing how easy it is to meditate when you're sick. That's why a few people have heard me say, I was enjoying being sick. Meditation was, you know, much easier because I had nothing else to do. I couldn't do anything, couldn't use your brain. Your brain was stuffed. But the mind was really, really clear. So you could sit nice and peacefully for a lot of the night and just get into nice, blissful states. But it's also, you notice how that relaxed the mind. And the body afterwards felt so much better. You weren't looking for just magic bullets, so you'd come out afterwards and the whole problem had gone. But at least you knew just how to deal with the sicknesses which you must face from time to time. One of the most important things, you know, when you are, you know, doing some meditation is, again, please never try to do anything to get rid of things. That's a kind of big mistake. I said so many times, this was the first time, was one of the doctors who was a young boy at the time. He was a young boy when I first came here to Perth. And he saw him grow up, encouraged him, did good at school, went to university, became a doctor. And he was a young man who, when he was doing his intern work, I think at Royal Perth, then he came to see me on a Saturday morning. He said, I have to resign. I can't stand this job as a doctor. I said, why not? Is it too much hard work? He said, not that, the emotional part of it. Because that was the time when his first patient passed away, unexpected. And it was a shock. And he was supposed to be in charge of her. He tried to revive her, but she'd gone. And that Saturday morning. And he was responsible, so he had to tell the husband, your wife has died. Totally unexpected. And then see the two kids. Now, you got no mummy anymore. I remember him saying that, you got no mother anymore. That's such a tough thing to do. As a nurse or a doctor. He said, I can never do that again. And that's, of course, when I told him, you've totally, I don't know who's been teaching you in the hospital, you've totally misunderstood the purpose of being a doctor, or being a nurse, or being a therapist, or being a monk even. My job is not to cure you of your problems. If you want to be a curer, then you'll fail many times. The job of a doctor is to care for that patient and all those involved, and to care for the family of those people who are involved, to care for yourself as well. You can't always cure, but you can always care. That's an important thing to understand. Of course, he went back to work and became a sort of a specialist and a really, really, really good friend. This is actually, you can't always cure sicknesses, but you can always care for them. And of course, that's what we do. You know, if I have any sicknesses, you try and care for it as much as you possibly can. And some of the sicknesses which I've had in my life, remember one of the worst sicknesses I had, I was only 23 when I became a monk. And I think the first year, 24, I was fit and healthy and strong. And then we got this disease in the northeast of Thailand. No one knew what it was, but it was a really heavy fever. So I went straight to the hospital. You know, the monks sent me there, have me sort of admitted to the hospital in Ubon, Rajasthan, in northeast of Thailand. Thailand was a third world country in those days. And the northeast was the backwaters of that country. I remember seeing a couple of the missionaries who were trying to convert people over in northeast Thailand. They always said it was a one-way ticket. Because none of them survived. After 3, 4, 5 years, they died. Because, you know, it was a very rough part of the world at the time, in the 70s. But anyhow, went into that hospital, to the monks' ward in that hospital. So in the whole row of beds, 6 or 7 on each side of the ward. And then at 6 p.m. or roughly that time, you know, the night nurse had a night nurse station at the front of this ward, disappeared and didn't come back. And I knew enough Thai at that time to ask another monk, should we alert the hospital authorities? There's no night nurse. And he said, what are you talking about? There never is a night nurse. If you get really sick at night time, it's just unlucky karma, that's all. Even though I was a Buddhist, I wasn't that committed to be a Buddhist. I wanted to stay alive. And then, I can't resist these stories. And then, the nurse. Sometimes people think a 23-year-old, 24-year-old Westerner, I was quite thin and handsome in those days, isn't that really dangerous? But those nurses in the hospitals, they don't look like these flight attendants you see on Thai Airways. These were built like water buffalo, really big and strong, these nurses for the monks. And you know why? They had to be strong. Because when it came to, you know, just the medication I had to take, an injection twice a day in my backside. So you had to bare your backside. And this nurse, it was not sensual at all. Because those needles, do you remember the days of recyclable needles? They'd use them many, 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 many times. And I always thought that I'd use them in Bangkok, first of all, and then send them up to the provinces where the poor people were, and then from the provinces to the monks' ward. We were supposed to be the tough guys. And so when they sent them to the monks' ward, those needles were really dull. Honestly, I'm not exaggerating. So they would never inject you. Stab. That's what it was like, stabbed in the morning, in the afternoon, don't know how many days, until your backside was just so sore. And even though I had a lot of compassion, and compassion was important, unfortunately I could not spread compassion to that nurse. I do my chanting, may all beings be happy and well, except that one. It really hurt. And nothing was working. I even say that Ajahn Chah came to see me. And you know what he said? He said, Ajahn Brahm, you'll either get better or you'll die. Either way, you don't have to worry, it won't last. That didn't really reassure me at all. But I do remember what eventually happened after 3 or 4 weeks of having a fever and feeling as weak as I've ever felt in my whole life. Really, really just hard even just to walk to the bathroom. They had a bathroom at the end of the ward. The lucky monks had the bed next to the bathroom. It stank, but nevertheless you could get there. For me, I could only go there once a day. You had to just hold on to the end of the bed and just basically fall onto the next bed and then just go around that and fall onto the next one. It took about 20-30 minutes actually to go from my bed to where the bathroom was. We didn't have any nurses to support us. And then you go onto the toilet and you get everything done because you didn't want to go back there again twice a day. That was just too much. No bedpans either. So anyway, so it felt really, really weak, very sort of hopeless. And then, I don't know why you do this, but sometimes you do have these inspiration moments. Just like each one of you, I hope. Just like, you know, when I said about that toothache. Let go. So I decided to try that. And it's incredible just what that mind can do. You let go, which means you're not fighting anymore. I'd been fighting for about 3 weeks and nothing was working. So you let go. Then you find your mind became blissed out. Another bliss out moment. You can imagine what that's like. You know, just really weak, aching, in a fever, feeling really terrible. Worst I probably ever felt in my whole life. And then suddenly just going into this beautiful bliss state. That's what meditation is like. The five senses, the body is vanishing, and instead you're accessing your mind. And once you did that because you had to. Just like that guy who had his legs cut off, he had to. He had this amazing meditation experience. He blissed out. He survived eventually. Remember this guy telling me that when he was in hospital, the guy who left the brakes off the cart, the vehicle, which, you know, ran down the slope and cut his legs off, he wanted to come and apologize to him. He came to the front of his ward in Australia and he saw him with his two legs off and he was just so embarrassed he ran away and never came back. And he tried to say sorry. And this guy in the bed said, look, you don't have to even say sorry. That was just such an amazing experience which I had doing that. Thank you. That was actually the wrong thing to say because that confused the person who was responsible for leaving the brakes off even more. But anyway, you can understand what you feel. Doesn't matter how much pain you have. When you understand how your mind works, it's amazing just what it can do. I can let go of so much difficulty and pain and allow healing to happen. So anyway, just going into those deep meditations on a hospital bed with a sore backside, I couldn't sit on my bottom, it was way too sore. I was just lying down there in one of the most unorthodox meditation postures I've ever seen. But you had this wonderful sense of peace and bliss and freedom. And I should have been a bit more alert, but I'm pretty sure that was probably the time the fever broke and the recovery happened. You did that many, many, many times in life. Even remember Ajahn Chah telling me how he overcame his malaria fever. Because malaria is one of those diseases which every monk would get. Fortunately, I never got malaria fever when I was a monk. But nevertheless, some people did. Anyway, Ajahn Chah would have malaria fever often. And then one day, in the middle of a big fever, really, really hot, sweating, he decided instead of trying to get rid of it, he said, go inside of it. That's the other beautiful thing when you understand what the mind is. You go inside, you don't go outside. And so he went right inside his mind. And he described it. It's just the metaphors which people use. He said it was like being in a big forest fire. In the center, it was cool. On the outside, it was really, really hot. Hotter and hotter and hotter and hotter. But where he was sitting was always cool. And it got so incredibly hot, it exploded. This was how it felt for him. And that was the last time he had malaria fever. It's an interesting sort of concept. You're accessing the nature of the mind and its power, not through wanting, but learning how to go into things inside and to places where you're with the mind and not with the body. And great amounts of healing can happen. One of those other sicknesses, which is so common in this world is with the cancers. And for the last 35 years, I remember the first few years I never went to the Cancer Support Association in Cottesloe, but for the last 35 years or so, I've been going every year to teach there, and they come to monastery. Why? Why was it, for those of you who know they call it Solaris now, it's over in Railway Parade in Cottesloe, that because one of the local member of parliament, that was Colin Barnett's seat, the leader of the Liberal Party. And so I think when he was in government, because it was just around the corner from his own house, he decided to get a lot of funds to build this new complex over there for them, and a multi-million dollar in development for the place. And so when they did their opening ceremony, of course it was opened by the Premier, and the other VIP was Ajahn Brahm. And I thought, what on earth are they asking me to go there for? This was this was the politician's place. He said, no, no, we want you to come because of all the people who've been serving us. You've been serving us for so long, never asking anything. And also just what you've given us is something which is invaluable. Many, many people, they're changing the attitudes towards sickness. And it works. And because of that, you can actually kind of understand the power of the mind and meditation to make huge differences in the way that people deal with serious, even called life-threatening illnesses. So because of that, that's why I was invited. And I took the wonderful opportunity. I did ask, because he was a premier at the time when we did the opening, I did ask, they had a couple of bodyguards. I say, you know, part of the blessing which I usually do is with holy water. It's okay if I bless the premier with holy water. So he got a soaking from me as well. But anyway, I always wondered why. Why do these things actually work? Too much problem in our world is that we just do not emphasize the importance of a thing called the mind, the emotional part of the human being. It's not just, again, a byproduct of the brain. It's almost more fundamental than that. And once we can understand what our mind is, especially when you're meditating, what peace is, and what the joy is, how it gives you a sense of freedom from the body, and how it gives you a sense of letting the body look after itself, and it becomes much healthier. I did cough a couple of times when I started this talk. When was the last time I coughed now? I did this years and years ago. I say in Canberra, I had a really bad cold. The first time I was in Canberra, this was about 40 years ago, and had a really bad cold. I was really exhausted. I thought I'd get a cup of tea before I gave a talk. Didn't even get a cup of tea. So I was exhausted. I had a cold. And you started giving a talk, sneezing and coughing. And after a while, just you could see people weren't looking at you at all. They were looking at their clock. They were looking at their... They didn't have iPhones in those days. They were just looking at the floor. They were fantasizing. I'm not sure what they were thinking. But anyway, I didn't really want to know. Because I couldn't string even a whole sentence together without coughs and sneezes. So I did ask. I said, it was a terrible talk, one of the worst I've ever given. And then I asked, is it okay we do some meditation for half an hour? It's a good idea. So we meditated, not guided meditation, because I needed to meditate inside myself, quietly. And I always remember afterwards, after the half an hour meditation, I gave a nice talk for 45 minutes. And I asked the people afterwards, what do you think about that? And they said, they were amazed. There was not one cough, not one sneeze, and just this perfect talk. He said, that really stood out. How on earth could you be sneezing and coughing so much, and then half an hour later, it had gone? I remember also doing that once when I was in South Korea, up in the mountains, about to give a talk on TV, live TV. That's even more scary. They're having a big function up there. And I was supposed to be, Ajahn Gunhao was up there as well, but he got me to give the talk. I had this amazing cold, sneezing, you know, stuff coming out of my nose. And I had to give a talk on live TV, nationwide, in South Korea. And so I thought, oh my goodness, what would it be like giving a talk on live TV and having all this liquid coming out of your nose? That'd be very embarrassing. I had about 20 minutes this time, so sit down, do my meditation, just like I taught you. Relax the body, relax the mind, get to peace. Stay in that peace as long as you can. And when you get into that peaceful state, afterwards, you could give a lovely talk on nationwide TV in South Korea without any snot at all. Snot-free talk. I'm not being gross. It was just kind of weird how you can calm everything down and get your body to be peaceful and relax and be healthy. So please understand, this is actually how, when you develop your mind, you develop your emotions. These are just some of the byproducts. I don't know why more people don't do this. Do you need health insurance? Even the monks over in California told me years ago that if you can get some recognized person to sign on your health insurance that you are a regular meditator, you get quite a significant reduction in the amount of money you have to pay for your health insurance. I don't know if they do that here in Australia. Why not? Because it works. The evidence is really strong. So anyhow, if you ever move to California, I'll sign it for you. You've been here, you've been on a few retreats, and then you'll get cheaper health insurance. Even come to this Buddhist Society of Western Australia can save you money. Are you interested? We don't pay any here anyway, so it doesn't matter. No, it's good. So anyway, those are some of the benefits of the meditation for your health and for your well-being. So I know that sometimes people say, oh, Ajahn Brahm, you should look after yourself. You shouldn't be giving a talk tonight. I do look after myself. Instead of using medication, you use meditation. One letter difference. But this is far more powerful. I've seen it in others, I've seen it in myself. I've seen it in you. Learn to create this beautiful, kind mind and the mindfulness together with it, the kindfulness. And you can actually, I can feel it just getting my body really strong and healthy. Which also means you never have any fear. Too many people have fear of diseases and sicknesses, fear of pain. Please, no need. Be in this moment, and then the fear can never come up. Whatever's happening is already here. Why be afraid of it? It's already arrived. It's only dreams and fantasies is what you are afraid of. Things which haven't arrived yet. So anyway, as usual, I talk too much. I did that just to prove it to myself that I can give a talk for 50 minutes and then answer questions. Thank you for listening. Thank you. Thank you, Eddie. Because you clapped me, if you want to ask a question, you can. But first of all, is there anything on the internet? Or is the internet more sick than I am? No, no, it's not good. Thank you. Very good. Excellent. Oops. First question. I've been riddled with fear of fear and panic. I struggle with persistent thoughts about fear and the future. How do I stop fixating and ruminating about anxiety? Again, one thing which I maybe ask you is when you have this idea of anxiety, can you please write down what you're afraid of? Put it on a piece of paper. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Keep adding to them during the day. And the following day, see how many of those things actually happened. You'll find that most of them never happened. I'm honest about that. If something does happen, it's not exactly the same as you expected. It's much less. The only thing to be afraid of is, again, as you say, fear itself. That's one of those reasons, one of those stories about that going to the Cancer Support Association, now called Solaris, in Cottesloe. That the first time I went there, this lady put her hand up at question time and said she had suffered from breast cancer. She was now in full remission, but she was so afraid. What would happen if that breast cancer returned? That was her question. And the answer was so easy. What would happen if it didn't return? Next question, please. Such a simple answer. But it was the first time she heard that. What would happen if it didn't return? All the things you're afraid of, what would happen if that didn't happen? What would happen if the thing you were most afraid of never occurred? She understood that straight away. I don't know, maybe she was just ready for it. But the cancer never came back. But she would come back every year. And that's after about 30 years she led on. That's why she insisted I would come every year. And she would always make sure she came. Cancer never came back, but I did. You can understand that fear, just how that is counterproductive. You may have a lovely relationship with your partner, and then you think, you're afraid, what would happen if it all goes wrong? Because you are tense, you can't enjoy the moment, that means that the relationship does go wrong. You're too tense and too worried. For goodness sake, relax and enjoy this moment. Put love into this moment, not fear about the future. Anyway, the next question here. Dear Ajahn Brahm, I recently had a large bowel surgery. I now have a stoma. I regret having surgery and I'm struggling with life with a stoma. How can I apply Buddhist psychology to help cope? Buddhist psychology. You're struggling with a stoma. I don't know why. Does it smell? Does it usually smell? I know it's a baggie, yeah. But it doesn't smell usually, does it? It's just you've got another organ. It's just like you've got an extra organ. I've only got a certain amount of organs. You've got one extra to me. Why? You're so superior to me. Try and find a different way of looking at it. If you have a stoma, you never have to suffer from constipation. Have you ever had like constipation? You think, wouldn't it be a wonderful thing just to have a little button in here or a little tap and you just can open up and all comes out much easier instead of having to suffer from this for so long. You never have diarrhea. You've got certain advantages if you have a stoma. That's what I often always do, try and see the positive side of it. Buddhist psychology help. Don't think what you've lost, think what you've gained. And honestly, I've mentioned in this talk today that many people said, oh, may you get well soon. And my response to many of you was, no, I don't want to get well. I'm enjoying this, being sick. I'm not that sick. I was last week, but today it's no problem at all. It just really motivates me to get deeper into meditation, being sick. And I don't know why, but the meditation is easier for me, especially at night time, when you get into it, or just even this afternoon, getting into it, because I can't do much else. So it's good. So thank you. Please don't give me any medicines, okay? I'm enjoying this. And even there's change in my voice. Now, you must be bored with my voice all the time. I don't know how many talks I give here. Make it more husky, more macho, more like John Wayne. I don't know. You can enjoy it more. And I'm honest with you there. I don't just act one way in front of you and act another way when I'm in my room. So if you've got a stoma, wonderful. Do you let other people see it? Are you ashamed of it? If anyone has a stoma here, please, you can come and show me, and I'll bless it. Don't be embarrassed about anything in life. Don't think there's something wrong with having something which is compassionately making you healthy. Anyway, next one from Germany. How do you let go of things if they do not let go of you but keep on coming up like negative things from the past, words, people, situations? Please help. A lot of time it's not that they keep visiting you. You keep actually going out to seek them out. I always thought when I was meditating and then these random thoughts would come up, I thought they were random thoughts. But when I got deep into my meditation and more alert, my mindfulness increased, I realized that they weren't just coming uninvited. I was seeking them out. Either I didn't realize that I was wanting to disturb myself. But once, as soon as I realized I don't need to do this, then they stopped coming. So these things you'd love to let go of, let them go. They'll only keep coming up when you start looking for them. The same with, you know, sometimes in the morning, I wake up and just feel really good, and then just like this afternoon, just after meditating, afterwards I ask a stupid question, hey, where's my cough gone? And then it comes up again. I don't need to ask that question. Why do you need to keep sort of looking for things to disturb you? Last question from Canada. How can I deal with psychological pain of quitting smoking in a similar way you spoke about physical pain and letting go? One thing about quitting smoking is that the pain gets lesser and lesser and lesser every week. And don't just think about, you know, just the quitting smoking. Look at it more like you are starting to develop just more peace and freedom in your lungs. Sometimes I look upon my own lungs with gratitude. They work 24 hours a day for me. And years ago I kind of decided that it's my lungs which connect me with nature, because the carbon dioxide which I breathe out, that's what all that's green sort of soaks up. It's important for the greenery, for them to survive, to take in my carbon dioxide. And those leaves and trees and branches and all that's alive in their gardens, they feed me with the oxygen. So I feel that I'm connecting with nature just when every time I breathe. And the last thing I want to do is instead to connect with smoke. So it's kind of beautiful to be able just to imagine that instead of breathing in smoke, you're breathing in this gift from all that's green, and you're breathing out your gift of carbon dioxide, not smoke, you know, for all that's green so they can survive as well. That's just one possibility. And physical pain and letting go, after a while you realize you can do it. Strange thing, but sometimes people say you have to keep working to let go of the pain of the past. I remember one of our members here who was a clinical psychologist and having these great arguments with him. And eventually he conceded that you can let go all at once. Trust, I don't want to do this anymore. And you don't. You know, the previous head monk in this place, Ajahn Chakravo, he used to tell me that his own father, Italian, so he was smoking. That's what people did in those days over in Melbourne. And he just decided one day, okay, it's a rotten thing to do, I'm not going to do that anymore. And he just stopped. He never smoked again. You can. If number one, you realize it's possible, and number two, you realize what a wonderful benefit that is. You don't keep looking upon the past and like free sort of boost of energy coming back. You just do it. That's how I gave up when I was a kid. A university gave up alcohol. Just gave it up. I remember one of my cousins, he said, "Oh, you're not going to last." So he bet me £1, this was about 50 years ago, that I wouldn't, 55 years ago, that I wouldn't be able to maintain giving up alcohol. He still hasn't paid up yet. Once you decide, you can decide, and your mind actually changes and you realize its benefits, how beautiful it is to be free of having to smoke. Of course, one thing is to make sure, many people tell me that one of the reasons they smoke is because the cigarettes are just easily available. Please make sure they're in the next room or in a high cupboard or something. You can't just go automatically to get them. So you really have to really want to smoke the next cigarette. And then in that whole journey from where you are to get that cigarette to light it, it's a bit too much for you, too far for you. And it's much easier to not do that. Okay, any questions from the floor? Go on, Eddie.
Ajahn Brahm, nobody asked, I ask again. Ajahn Brahm, thank you so very much for today's very, very deep talk on healing, you know, with reference to the mind. That's very, very important, you know. Yeah, yeah. You know, the Buddha was telling us, you know, our mind is a forerunner of all states.
Yes.
Ajahn Brahm, don't you think we could see things more clearly if we break down the mind, you know, into the conscious and the subconscious, you know? All right? Break it down, conscious, yeah. But, for example, you're saying about we'll take the the pain, you know, when you had toothache, you know,
yes.
And then you said you let go. Yeah. Don't you think, Ajahn Brahm, the pain is given power if we use the subconscious mind, you know. Because the subconscious mind, you focus on the pain, so it becomes, you give it power, it becomes unbearable, you know.
Yes.
If we can sort of use the, what I call, to turn, put down the subconscious mind and put, you know, put up the conscious mind, okay? All right? Don't give it that power. In the conscious mind, you think of some other things outside, you know. You have to practice that, this thing, and then the pain goes off. Like, say, for example, if you have any stress, for example, okay? If we go to, if you're alone by yourself, this thing, okay? So your mind, you use the scapula, you harp on it, then the problem comes, you know? Once you go to work and everything, you forget it, no problem.
Yeah.
So when you come back again or alone, then, you know, you give it the power, the problem comes.
Yes,
that's what I use, you know.
Okay,
you break it up into two.
I do know that many times that people who are playing like AFL or rugby or soccer, sometimes they can even break their leg and they can't feel it. They carry on playing. Because the game is more important to them. And it's amazing just the power of the mind to actually even block things out if they've got something else to look at which is more interesting for you. But it's also, the subconscious is an interesting part of the idea of Western medicine. Mm. In Buddhism, we get so aware, we see not just, you know, what most people think of the conscious mind, the awareness gets so strong that which was subconscious is fully conscious. Mm. We can see just how that mind works. Mm. There's nothing hidden anymore. Mm. That's a wonderful thing to see. Mm. You're not afraid. It's a lot of time it's fear hides part of how our mind works.
Yeah.
And once we see it and we have no fear, it's like, you know, it doesn't bother us anymore.
Yeah. We don't give the problem the power, you know?
Indeed, yeah.
Yeah.
Mm. Are there any more questions?
Thank you.
We could keep talking here until there's only just the two monks and Eddie left. But I do know
Sorry, Ajahn Brahm.
Before
I came here, I was driving. I was just saying, oh, Eddie, no more questions. You know, you've been asking too many questions. People might get annoyed, the thing, you know. And here I find myself asking questions. Because I think it's important to me.
Yes, you're subconscious.
Subconscious.
Give me the power.
No. Thank you, Eddie. Every now and again when people ask questions from overseas, they always say, best wishes to Eddie. So thank you, Eddie. Okay, so let's pay respects to Buddha, Dhamma, and Sangha, and then we'll see you the next time. Do you prefer that chanting with a much softer voice? No? We'll see. Okay. Good night, everybody.